Dear listeners, I'm Lauren Conlon, and before you embark on this investigative journey with me, I want to offer a sincere word of my acknowledgement and gratitude. When I, as the host, first set out on this path, I was admittedly very green. I lacked the seasoned expertise and finesse that comes with experience in investigative podcasting and reporting. However, every story has a beginning and an ending, and this podcast represents the start of my own investigative odyssey. So as you dive into these episodes, you may notice rough edges or moments where my inexperience shines through, but please know that every stumble and misstep has been a crucial part of my learning process, and I've embraced each challenge as an opportunity for growth and improvement. So I want to express my heartfelt appreciation to each and every one of you who has stuck with the story despite my imperfections, because Grant's story is important. So your support and patience have been invaluable as I've navigated the complexities of investigative podcasting. And your feedback, whether constructive criticism, words of encouragement, or maybe something that wasn't so nice, has helped me and helped shape this podcast into what it is today. So without further ado, here is Corruption: What Happened to Grant Solomon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Corruption: What Happened to Grant Solomon. I'm your host, Lauren Conlon. Let's start off with another big weekend of Grant Solomon in the news. First, it was a Daily Mail article, and then TheBlaze.com also published their version of the story. And since conservative media personality Glenn Beck owns The Blaze, he shared it with his 3 million followers. And whether you like him or not, he has 3 million followers, so it's just great exposure in general. And look, the article, it was tough. If you have not read it, stop right now and go to the episode notes and read it, and then come back and listen to this episode. And if you recall, I did a past episode, and the episode was from June of 2023 to be exact. I did the episode with Aolani Santiago, who is the host of the Stories from the Mortuary podcast, because I had no idea that any of that happened with Grant and his ankles. And by the way, there are witnesses besides Angie who did see the state of Grant. So I want to point that out. And yes, the funeral home denies it. But it should also be known that Pam Stevens, the former Williamson County funeral home director and owner, she also wrote a declaration on behalf of Aaron Solomon when he was filing his 2021 defamation suit that was tossed out. And I read her declaration, and in my opinion, I found some of her wording odd.
And it could be nothing, of course, but I tweeted about this as well. So Angie had already gone and contacted the director of burial services about the issues they were experiencing with Grant's bronze marker and the gravesite. And Pam made this statement in the declaration. She said she called Angie three times between the 7th or 8th of April. And then she says in the declaration, I tried to call her over the next few days. Again, most likely she called her on the 7th or the 8th per the declaration. And then she states, on April 9th, she finally called me back. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, that's 1 or 2 days max. And she already went to someone else to get what she needed. So it seemed to me that Pam was kind of reaching and exaggerating to kind of make Angie look sloppy. And listen, the Daily Mail, I want to say this, they have an intense legal department. So a very intuitive journalist wrote this article, asked Angie questions and others questions as well, and published the article. Angie did not write the article. The article had to be vetted by a legal team. And as you know, there have been complaints filed with the ethics board against this funeral home, and the complaints were not taken seriously. They were taken into consideration, I'd say, but nothing actually happened. And a quick update I want to provide from last week. I did write an email to Gallatin Mayor Paige Brown, who didn't respond. And in all fairness, I did call her out on a public forum on X and on Facebook about her quote in 2020. So I guess I can't blame her for not jumping to write me back after I called her out. But listen, Mayor Paige, if you don't want to write back to me, write an email to Angie Solomon. She didn't say anything to you. My email, of course, was very respectful. I'm just saying I'm not surprised. I'm very used to not getting any information when it comes to Grant. So let's get to our guest today, our special guest, and what we're going to go through. So our guest is Misty Maris, who is a legal contributor and attorney. You have seen her on CNN, News Nation, Access Hollywood. She is everywhere, and I truly love her commentary. And she was actually on the episode of Dan Abrams Live when Angie had her segment. So she was very familiar with everything when I asked her to be on the show. So today we're going to discuss some of the past litigation, things pertaining to Grant and Gracie, and how things were handled. And I want to refresh everyone's memory that Judge Deanna Johnson ruled that Angie was a, quote, abusive litigant and barred her in 2019 from filing any motions against Aaron Solomon until Gracie is 18 years old. And as a reminder, Gracie is only 17. And I also want to point out that Deanna Johnson's husband is Senator Jack Johnson, and they all attended Grace Chapel, which is connected with the school, Grace Christian Academy, who at one point said they had a position, a coaching position of some sort for Aaron Solomon in the sports department after his daughter had already made sexual abuse allegations against him. It's just, it's so messy. And as a side note, I've received multiple calls from sources, multiple, not one, I'm talking like three or four, who have said they did not have a fair and just experience with Judge Johnson, and they definitely indicated that they have no interest in speaking on the record because of the power that these people hold, and I completely understand completely. It's easy for me to say from a different state, but I imagine if I lived close by that I wouldn't want to go on the record and tell my story about someone that I feel is in power and could possibly wrong me again. And to be clear, these are personal experiences of certain people. I am sure there are many people that really enjoyed being in her courtroom. I just happened to speak to people that did not. Let's get to Misty Maris and check the episode notes as well with how you can follow her and her work. Misty Maris, thank you so much for joining me. You were an absolute delight to watch on the air, and you were actually on the News Nation episode that featured Angie Solomon's segment about Grant.
Thank you so much for having me. I have really enjoyed watching your coverage of this story because this one has gone in and out of the limelight. It kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And there's so many interesting parts of this and so many inconsistencies. It's definitely a story that deserves some attention.
Yeah, and I do want to point out that for the longest time, nobody in the national news would touch this at all. And then recently, I want to say in the last 2 to 3 months, it's been getting some coverage, like obviously News Nation, Daily Mail, and now over the weekend, The Blaze. It was pretty incredible that Glenn Beck, you know, if you like him, you hate him, whatever, he has 3 million followers and he posted about it.
Yeah, and that's actually drawing so much more attention. And I've seen so much more interest just being at News Nation frequently. The amount of coverage that it's getting on those shows and the amount of guests who are actually directly involved or directly impacted by this horrible story, I think it's definitely going to become something bigger because it's really on its way there with all of the eyes that are on it now. And we know that sometimes these stories, it takes the media to draw attention to it in order to get any clarity.
You're so right. And what I wanted to do today, I've made it very apparent to everybody listening that when I started this podcast, I was so green. And a lot of my earlier coverage is not thorough. It's very cringy. And now that I've learned so much about the law and about criminal justice and whatever over the last year, I want to take the time to dive back into some of these documents and what Angie went through in court, what she went through with custody, with Aaron. And look, I'm not asking you to implicate anybody. I'm not asking you to agree that many of us have suspicions that some of these judges might not have been appropriate to be a part of their custody battle and a part of what was going on with this family. But I want to point something out. So Judge Deanna Johnson had ruled that Angie Solomon was an abusive litigant and that she couldn't file any sort of motion with Aaron Solomon until Gracie was over the age of 18. Deanna Johnson, they attended the same church as the Solomon family. I don't, I mean, and again, to be clear, it was a mega church, so to speak. However, the school was connected to the church. It's all on the same campus. And it's very apparent that, people knew who went to the school. They knew that the school was involved with some of these allegations. What do you make of that she was allowed to be a part of this?
Yeah, so it's very, very intertwined. And that's part of why this case is so interesting because this can happen in these insular type communities. That's what this is, right? There's a lot of overlap between the court system, the church, the school. In general, what you could do is you could raise that there's a conflict of interest with this judge. That would be the legal process that you could go through to say this judge isn't going to be impartial and base this on the record. They have knowledge that's outside of that. And that's why they should not be a part of any proceeding. But let me tell you, there's something a little bit nuanced here, is that these are family court proceedings. And the proceedings in family court, they don't have the same level of evidentiary rules that you have in other courts. It's a lot more lenient. It's a lot different. The judge has a lot more discretion. There isn't a jury. It's a very, very different process. And look, it varies jurisdiction. I'm a New York lawyer. I'm not going to pretend like I, am intricately involved in the law there, in that jurisdiction. But I'm talking as a general principle. And that's why you see sometimes in these family court proceedings, or in many cases that involve allegations of domestic violence that ultimately end in some sort of terrible tragedy. And I'm not speaking about this case specifically, just in general. You see that there's not a lot of action taken when you really go back and dig into those family court records. And a reasonable person says, why? And the reality is that the judge has so much discretion over what happens in that courtroom, like what you just said, qualifying somebody as a litigant who's adverse, who is limited on what legal mechanisms they can use in court. That is not a normal thing. It has to be something that's so severe that that you limit someone's ability to actually challenge court rules and court decisions and the process. And so, you know, when I was digging into this, and you've done so much research and you sent me even more than I know, because I've been covering it for a while. So I'm in it, I'm in the weeds in it. Yeah. But, you know, that's something that strikes me, is that the process, and look, I'm not saying, I'm not impugning this judge, I'm not impugning that court, but I do know how it is in a family court setting where there is such a great deal of power bestowed upon the judge that would have more checks and balances if it was in another courtroom.
It's everything you just said. It's like, I knew this. It's like, it's very obvious, right? In family court, there's not a jury. I never processed that. I never processed how much weight a judge could hold and how, in my opinion, this judge should have had nothing to do with this case. Her husband is also a senator, Jack Johnson in Tennessee. And he attacked, so I have to look this up and I'm not up on this, but in 2022, he was trying to pass a bill where the public could not obtain open records on deaths that were considered non-criminal. And this stemmed from the death of the country singer, Naomi Judd. Is it Naomi Winona? Yeah. She shot herself, and the Judd family was like, the press is trying to get all this info and it's disrespectful. He just ran with it. And I'm thinking to myself, if we didn't have open records, we would not have the police report. We wouldn't have the medical report for Grant Solomon because they considered it non-criminal. So just going back to this, I want to share, and I want to ask you this. I sent you the substantiation of the abuse of Gracie Solomon at the hands of her father. I sent you a restraining order. Why is it that the state can substantiate this, but nothing happens to the father?
Right. And that's what's really so odd, especially since he ultimately got custody. I mean, at the very, very least, that would be something that would be cut off.
Well, this was, let me just point out, the date of this substantiation was 2021. And I believe the restraining order date, I can pull that up. That was also a bit later. The custody battle started in 2013. That's when it all started. And what happened was Aaron had stated that Angie had, she was crazy. She had mental health issues. Now, what those mental health issues weren't exactly clear. She had a doctor on her behalf say, nope, this she's not mentally ill. This checks out. And what's interesting, but heartbreaking, is that the judge ruled with Aaron. But not only that, she had to go back to work as a pharmacist, even though she was crazy, so she could pay child support.
Right. And part of that, that's also it's a question mark about the process. And that's because if there is somebody who has a competency issue, they have an issue relating to whether or not they have the ability to understand what the proceedings are and engage in their in the proceedings in a meaningful way, which is what you're speaking about. You're speaking about somebody who has significant mental health issues to the point where it's impacting custody.
Yeah.
There would usually be a guardian. There would be a process in place for somebody to advocate on that person's behalf. And so there's just a lot of issues that happen along the way that don't really jive. And so, yes, I was a little premature in, you know, the fact that he had custody, although there was a family court record of these allegations of abuse, right? And then ultimately, you get to where it's substantiated, but there's no charges. But the reality is, in that particular, where we are in that venue, where you're getting a restraining order, the standard is different than a probable cause standard that would be for making an arrest. The standard is much lower. And so one can be true. You can have the restraining order, which I think is weird because there's a carve out that he can actually go to the school.
I'll get into that. I do want to just let you know that at one point there was down the line, there was a guardian. There was a guardian at litem. So
good. I was going to say there would have had to be.
there was. At the beginning, absolutely not. They were in the custody of Aaron Solomon. They didn't see their mom for a very, very long time. The kids were devastated. They wanted to see their mom, but you know, it happened this way. And then eventually there was a guardian. And then after that, you know, the kids were sent back to live with their father by a judge. And Grant had stated, you know, I'm scared. And the judge, magistrate Jacques Cabell, he had ruled, and before, this is before lunch, he said, you know what, you can go back and live with your mom. And Grant celebrates with a friend. There's even a picture of him and his friend on the Freedom for Gracie website. And then after lunch, he said, you know what, you can hold your own. Your dad is shorter than you. You're 6'2". So yeah. And sent him back.
Which is just not a standard in the law.
I mean, right? You would think. And I was confused because I thought after a certain age, like the age of 12 or whatever, that it would be taken into consideration who the kids want to live with. And at that point in 2018, Grant and Gracie just left their dad's house and ran away to live with their mom. And Angie Solomon had basically said to Aaron Solomon, look, you know, I live closer to the school. Let's just work this out. And so they had essentially been living with her for a while and managing their father. They were doing the best they could to just manage his temperament, keep him happy and all of that. And so the restraining order was not granted until October of 2020, which is after Grant's death. That is when Gracie became very much afraid of her father.
Which that timeline, and just to think, going back to that family court process, in general, a guardian ad litem would be involved right from the beginning, especially when there's contention between the father and the mother relating to custody. And when there's a finding regarding her mental capacity to take care of the kids, there would be a guardian ad litem who would go through this. And just let me take it back to total legal. Mm-hmm. The test that's put into place is called the best interest test. It's different. It has different elements in every jurisdiction. It might be slightly different, but in general, it's the same. And the court is supposed to weigh a variety of factors. And one of those factors, when you have kids that are in these, that are not, you know, not 1-2 years old, that they're able to kind of be decision makers in a certain, mm-hmm. to a certain degree, is supposed to be the kid's preference. It's a factor that the court is supposed to consider. And actually, with each of those factors in every court order, mm-hmm. the court should go through every one.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And say, this is why this, this is why that. And that's how a decision is justified. As far as whether or not one parent is going to have more custody rights than the other, or in some cases, it'll be a grandparent who comes in and says they should be the primary caregiver, whatever it is. It's not ad hoc. It's not before lunch you say, you know, okay, that's your preference. That's going to be a factor that is weighed very heavily because of your age. It's going to outbalance other factors.
Yeah.
But after lunch, well, you are 6'2". That makes zero sense.
Yeah.
And there's just really, it just from an outside objective perspective, not knowing anything else about the case, that would be a cause for concern regarding process.
Right. And this is the same magistrate, just going back to what you said about having the school omitted from the restraining order. So what I read in previous court documents was that he was being offered some type of position, some type of assistant coaching position at some point with the school. I don't think a contract was in place because He never worked at the school. That's never on record. So this is pure speculation, but I'm thinking that he had the school write a letter on his behalf or something like that and presented it to the judge, because how else would you get that stricken from a restraining order? You know, your child's school and a school in general, when the state, the state hadn't substantiated him as an abuser yet, but the school knew it. The school had talked with Gracie, her mother, even Grant, all before this. And yet they still are open to having him be some kind of assistant coach. So I'm very confused by that. Like, what would it take for him to, yeah. What do you make of that?
And look, well, I mean, I think even if, okay, so say there is something relating to a contract or this position or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Both could be true. They could have limited access, because the major thing is protecting the person who's the subject of the restraining order, who would have been Gracie.
Right.
So even if he could maybe be in a certain parameter on school property, he should not have access to her that he wouldn't otherwise have with the other terms mm-hmm. of the restraining order. Yeah. That makes no sense, because that's the purpose of the restraining order. And also with a school, even a private school, if there are allegations of abuse, whether it be against a teacher, a preacher, a coach, even if it's somebody not related to the school, a parent, there's immediate law enforcement reporting obligations that kick in that the school is required to follow.
Right.
And, you know, those have changed significantly over the years, especially more recently, where there's been more of a spotlight on abuse and laws that have changed to protect abusers or laws that have changed to provide more protections for the abused.
Right.
And so with that, schools have mandatory reporting requirements that being a private school does not provide a carve out. And so all of that together, the access and what would be a requirement under the law to have and allow access in any capacity to Gracie that falls outside of the parameters of that restraining order is just odd. And it's hard to see what the justification would be based on what we know in the public sphere.
Right. That's exactly right. And what the school had said during that time was we have a safe room for her. It just made absolutely no sense. And that's what I just can't get my head around is why is this case? Why are they all seemingly siding with the father who has been accused of all these things? And when it's like, you don't really at a certain point, you know, when the kids are older, Gracie and Grant, you know, you don't see them with their father. They're not around town with their father. They're not having lunch with him. They're not doing things like a family would do. They're with their mother all the time. So why would this happen? Why would everybody be so set on the fact that just let Aaron Solomon at the school, even though his daughter has accused him of doing these horrific things? And going back to what you said about, like, you know, in Tennessee, you're a mandated reporter of abuse. If you hear it, and what was said in court, it's documented, is that the guidance counselor, she thought someone else reported it, so she didn't have to. She actually said that, well, I thought it was handled, so I didn't. I mean, what? What is that?
Well, and I gotta say, outside of this case, and even just when there's the accusation and he has access, and then the guidance counselor says, I don't know, I thought somebody else would do it, so I dropped the ball. They're almost inviting liability from not just in this case, but in other situations, because they're showing that they're not buttoned up on their policies. And that presents a whole other issue. Most times a risk manager or general counsel would be like, you can't do that. have to make sure that you're abiding by this in the most strict way with compliance with the law.
And speaking of that, we submitted a citizen complaint, or not me particularly, but a lot of the citizens in Franklin, Tennessee were very concerned about this. And they put a huge binder together, including everything we just discussed about the guidance counselor not reporting it, having records of this, and even letters from parents at the time. And it was sent to the mayor. It was sent to the sheriff's office. It was sent, I mean, everywhere. And so the mayor actually said, well, this is not my jurisdiction. And it's interesting because he is the mayor of Franklin, but technically it wasn't his jurisdiction. And he just kind of went like that. For those listening, I just kind of wipe my hands, but it's just crazy because it's like, this is, it seems like common sense here. You wouldn't want to do anything further. And then additionally, I had sent you the forensic interview with Tamika Sanders, who at that point was an officer, and now she's a lead detective. So she actually responded to the GCA complaint. And she said to whoever sent it to her, she just said, the statute is up, sorry. And that was another thing that I was like, is this a conflict of interest? She knows these children, Gracie right. and Grant, you know, and now Grant has passed. She knows, she did an evaluation on the mother. I mean, why should she get to handle this?
Yeah, and that's what's really kind of strange about it because, okay, as you said, there might be a conflict of interest, but even in, I'm just going to talk total lawyer. Mm-hmm. Because even if the statute of limitations had potentially passed about bringing some sort of action against the school, whatever it might be, whatever possible legal consequence there could be with respect to this issue involving Gracie specifically, there would still be an obligation on the part of the school to go and do an investigation. Because it doesn't matter whether the statute of limitations is passed. That's doing the due diligence. Even if that particular scenario isn't going to lead to litigation or some sort of claim, there's still the requirement that once you are knowledgeable about this type of failure, that you go back. And you know what would happen? And this speaks to your broader question.
Right.
You'd bring in a third party. You wouldn't bring in somebody who has any involvement. You'd be bringing in an independent third party to conduct the investigation and to write a report and say, here's all the failures. Have it be a law firm, whatever it is. Here's all the failures. And here's how you correct it. And here's how you make sure this doesn't happen moving forward. And here's potential issues that could have occurred because of the lack of reporting and whatnot. So, right. Yeah, there's just a lot of, I think this is, in these types of cases, where there is so much overlap just in the community, mm-hmm. that's when you find these potential conflicts. But you know, just looking at it, and this is sheerly legal, mm-hmm. you would still have to perform that process. You would still have to do that diagnostic of what went wrong, yeah. even if there wasn't an immediate consequence.
Right, right. And it's just very clear through the evidence, through paperwork, that the school was 100% on the side of Aaron Solomon. And that's not my opinion. That's just factual information on letters I've seen, on clearly actions. So it's really heartbreaking. And it's like going back to the, you know, to Tamika Sanders and the police, it's just like, this was brought to your attention. This school is clearly not handling these situations as it should. And it's going to happen again. And I don't even want to say this, but it's like, you know, you look at the Covenant School, you look at schools like that where these children, things happen to them and the schools are run a certain way and you just don't want a repeat of that. You know what I mean? You don't right. want somebody to feel like they're not being heard and then all of a sudden go insane because that's devastating to so many people. So one would hope that the school moving forward does hear people's cries, you know?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yes. And you're speaking very humanitarian and I agree, mm-hmm. but, yeah. But also just from that, say you're only 100% self-interested, you've opened yourself up to a whole host yeah. of issues. Yeah. And so
absolutely.
Both together, and especially a school, you know, obviously the goal of the school is to do right by the children and help them grow and learn and go to the next steps in life.
Yep.
And then the other piece is ensuring that the school isn't the subject of massive litigation or the subject of this type of scrutiny. Yeah. So it can function. So mm-hmm. it goes hand in hand.
Yeah. And what's so crazy is, you know, in the court docs, the custody docs that I had sent that were from 2021, the court mandated counselor, Emily Anderson, actually says did Grant Solomon express any fear of his father? And he was asked that, or she was asked this by Angie's attorney, and Emily said yes. And it's heartbreaking, you know, because at that point Grant had already passed away. Right. So it's just like all of this. And I know that minor records are sealed, obviously, but these were unsealed for whatever reason. And that makes it even worse that there was no investigation into Grant's death. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have this on record. He said, the counselor said in court, yes, he expressed fear for his father. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah. I mean, it's on both fronts. It's terrible that there was no investigation conducted when he first, whenever that was. I mean, you're talking about a particular point in time.
15, yeah.
You don't know if it happened before then, right? We wouldn't know if there had been other issues raised regarding fear of his father. And that's when somebody comes in and takes a look at the situation with scrutiny. Again, you're also talking about, he's a minor, but he's older, you know, he's aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
So it would be, it's a shame that somebody didn't step in when maybe something could have been done and he could have been helped.
And that's so heartbreaking to even think about, is that so many people could have done something and they did not. And in this document from 2021 discussing custody and whatnot, I mean, Emily Anderson also states, you know, things about Gracie. I mean, she said Gracie used to say, I hate when my dad plays with my hair. It makes me so uncomfortable. I mean, first of all, my dad has never played with my hair. I know everyone's dad's different, but if he did play with my hair, I don't think it would make me uncomfortable because it's my dad. So for someone to say that, or for a little girl to say that, that's also just so concerning in addition to everything else she said.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that's where counselors and those that, if somebody's expressing that as a kid, that's where the you dig deeper. Because kids don't exactly know what's right and what's wrong necessarily. They don't know parameters.
Right.
And that's why when something comes up that rings a bell, that's a trigger as to a potential issue, that's when the next steps have to happen.
Right, right. And they did not. And there you have a girl who now has to deal, on top of everything else, the grief of processing the death of her brother. And being terrified of her father and having complete PTSD over her father. And I just, you know, my heart breaks for her. And it's really lovely to see how she is moving forward in her life and how she's progressing. But I can't help but just think of how unfair things are when I go through some of these documents and I just see what could have been done, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, and you're right. It's looking back 2020, but in this particular case, it seems like there was a lot of opportunities for somebody to get more.
And is there anything that you just want to add? Anything that you maybe noticed that was odd or something you hadn't seen before, or just anything in general?
Yeah, I think that I didn't realize, because you have so many of the actual documents that come as part of the investigation. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I knew the extent of the record before this.
Right.
The record of issues in that household. And to me, that's where you look and you say, wow, there were a lot of opportunities for somebody to step in many different areas. And you know, really, it seems like the kids were almost, they had to be their own advocates.
Yeah.
And they didn't really have anyone to lean on. And I also think, just to think that, you know, he thought that the only way he was ever going to get the court's attention on this was to be 18.
I know.
That's just terrible. That's just terrible, because you can see that obviously they felt that they were very alone, and it was for a reason.
Absolutely. And, you know, you know, of course they had their mom, but they saw the way their mom was treated in court. And when she was thrown in jail over one Easter weekend for being this abusive litigant. And I mean, that's not, they claim she didn't pay some kind of child support. It's just, it's so crazy. It's like you go through all this and people that can just look up some of the old court docs on, you know, the Tennessee state doc, whatever, they'll say, oh, wow, you know, from 2013, this mom seems crazy. And it's just like, you have no idea. You literally have no idea. You're looking at one set of documents from X many years ago when this was planned. This whole thing of Angie being crazy, this was calculated. This was premeditated. And yeah, it drives me crazy. But anyway, I do want to thank you for your time, Misty, and all of your insight. It's so wonderful. And I'm so glad we got to talk about this case.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much. And you're doing a great job bringing this case into the limelight.
Thank you so much.
Okay, that was the very awesome Misty Maris. And as you can see, we jumped all over the place. So I'm sorry about that. I know that it was a little crazy. I had sent her a bunch of documents. I didn't send her every single one because there are too many. And I know how busy she is. But at some point, we talked offline. She is going to go through all of the documents with a fine-tooth comb, and we can record another episode and get into more detail. But I appreciate everyone listening. Thank you so much for all your support. And of course, sticking with this podcast, even though, as I always say, I felt like I could have done so much better at the beginning, but here we are. I'm a broken record. I apologize. Thanks for listening, guys. I'll be back next week with another episode of Corruption, What Happened to Grant Solomon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.